Theater 1030 presents from Don Cooper, Sherlock Holmes and the Case of the Devil's Step by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, in an adaptation by Michael Hardwick.
It was in spring of 1897 that Sherlock Holmes and Iron Constitution showed some symptoms of giving way in the face of constant hard work of the most exacting kind. And thus it was that we found ourselves together in a small cottage near the village of Tredonic Wallace, at the further extremity of the Cornish Peninsula. The vicar of the parish, Mr. Brownhay, whom we came to know as something of an archaeologist, and we also met his lodger, Mr. Mortimer Tregennis, an independent gentleman who increased the clergyman's scanty resources by taking rooms in his large, straggling house. These were the two men who entered abruptly into our little sitting room on Tuesday, March the 16th, as we were smoking together shortly after our breakfast hour.
Mr. Holmes, the most extraordinary and tragic affair has occurred during the night. We can only regard it as a special providence that you should chance to be here. In all England, you are the one man.
Mr. Longhill, I really must remind you that Mr. Holmes is here for the
benefit. No, no, no,
no,
I insist. You were saying, Miss Randham?
Thank you. Shall I speak, Mr. Tregennis? Perhaps it would be for the best, Vicar.
Very well. I may explain then, Mr. Holmes, that our friend here spent last evening in the company of his two brothers, Owen and George, and of his sister, Brenda, at Tredonic Water, their house, just across the way. He left them shortly after 10 o'clock. This morning, he was called there by Dr. Richards. And when he arrived, he found an extraordinary state of things. His two brothers and his sister were seated round the table, exactly as he had left them, cards still spread in front of them, and the candles burnt down to their sockets. The sister lay back, stone dead in her chair, while the two brothers sat on each side of her, laughing, shouting, and singing, the senses stricken clean out of them. All three of them, the dead woman and the two demented men, retained upon their faces an expression of the utmost horror. Mr. Mortimer Tregennis brought back the account of the vicarage, and I've had it over at once with him to consult you.
A most tragic occurrence. Please accept my sympathy. Mr. Tregennis, if you will forgive me, it will be necessary to ask you a few questions.
Ask what you like, Mr. Holmes.
Tell me about last night.
Well, I dined with my family, as the vicar said, and my elder brother George proposed a game of whist afterwards. We sat down about 9 o'clock. It was 10:15 when I moved to go. I left them all around the table as merry as could be.
Well, who let you out?
The housekeeper, Mrs. Porter, had gone to bed, so I let myself out.
Then shut the door behind you.
Why, yes.
In the window. Well, there.
Then the window was closed, of course.
And the blinds. Were they drawn?
No, they were not.
I see. And that was just how you saw everything this morning.
Exactly.
That's certainly remarkable. I take it you have no theory yourself to account for them.
No. It's devilish, Mr. Holmes, devilish. It's not of this world. Something has come into that room and dashed the light of reason from their minds. What human contrivance could that be?
I fear that if the matter is beyond humanity, it is certainly beyond me. For we must exhaust all natural explanations before we fall back on such a theory as this.
I quite agree, Mr. Holmes.
Help yourself, Mr. Tregennis. I take it you are divided in some way from the rest of your family. Since they lived together and we had rooms apart.
That is so, Mr. Holmes. Though the matter is past from memory.
I should like to hear about it, nevertheless.
Well, we were a family of mine owners at Redruth. That we sold out to a company and retired with enough to keep us. I won't deny there was some feeling about the division of the money, and it stood between us, but it was all forgiven and forgotten. And we were the best of friends together.
And looking back at the evening you spent together, does anything stand out in your memory as throwing a possible light on the tragedy? Any clue that would help me?
There was nothing at all, sir.
You left the man without any premonition of evil?
None at all.
Remarkable. Most remarkable. I think we had better go to Trudaine's Warsaw without further delay.
Oh, look here, Holmes, I hear you.
Hello, Watson, it's no use protesting. I confess that I have seldom known a case which at first sight presented a more singular problem.
This is Mrs. Porter, the housekeeper, Mr. Holmes.
A terrible business for you, Mrs. Porter.
That it is, sir. Not another night will I stay in this house after this.
Where will you go, my good woman?
My family's in St. Ives, and I'm not back till this very afternoon.
I understand you heard nothing at all in the night.
Not a sound, sir.
There was none?
Huh. I come there, and there they were, jibbering like great apes. And the poor missus. I flung open the windows to let the morning air in, it was that stuffy, and I told you I'd send a lad for the doctor.
And everything in this room is as you found it?
Yes, sir, exactly.
Amen. Ah, I see they had a fire in the grate last night.
It was lit after I arrived. The night was cold and damp.
Ah, yes. Well, with your permission, gentlemen, Dr. Watson and I will now return to our cottage. I am not aware that any new factor is likely to come to our notice here.
But, Mr. Holmes,
I will turn the facts over in my mind. If anything should occur to me, I will certainly communicate with you in the vicar. In the meantime, I wish you both good morning. Now, Watson, let us calmly define our position. Let us get a firm grip of the very little which we do know, so that when fresh facts arise, we may be ready to fit them into their places.
Very well, Holmes, if you must.
Thank you. Now, I take it in the first place that neither of us is prepared to admit diabolical intrusions into the affairs of men.
Certainly not.
Very good. There remain three persons who have been grievously stricken by some conscious or unconscious human agency. Now, when did this occur?
After Mortimer Forgiveness left the room, by all accounts.
No, within a few minutes afterwards. The cards still lay upon the table. It was already past the usual hour for bed, yet they had not changed their position nor pushed back their chairs.
Well, that's true enough. But Holmes, what about Mortimer himself? What were his movements after he left the room?
A very important point, which I have already considered.
Oh.
As you will remember, last night was wet, and it was not difficult to pick out his track. He appears to have walked swiftly away in the direction of his lodgings at the vicarage.
And then only Mrs. Porter.
Oh, hardly likely, Watson. She is evidently harmless. And you perceive how difficult it is.
They're only too clear.
I suggest, then, that we put the case aside until more accurate data are available, and devote the rest of our morning to... One moment, Watson.
Hmm?
We have a visitor, Watson.
A visitor? How do you know?
His footmarks are clearly discernible upon the path leading up to our door, but not away from it. Let us inquire within.
Good evening, Mr. Sherlock Holmes.
Then?
My name is Sterndale, Dr. Leon Sterndale. You may have heard...
Of course, my dear sir. Now, this is my friend, Dr. Watson.
How do you do?
Pleasure, Doctor.
We have seen you once or twice in the distance upon the cliff, Dr. Sterndale. I fancy that lions are a little scarce about these parts, though.
I find all the lions I want in Africa, Mr. Holmes. I have been here on holiday.
Of course.
Mr. Holmes, you'll pardon this intrusion, but I may tell you that I got as far as Plymouth on my way back to Africa when the news reached me this morning of this terrible happening. I came straight back again to help in the inquiry.
You know the Tregennis family, then?
Very well. I might go so far as to call them cousins. My mother came from Cornwall.
This has been a great shock to me, Mr. Holmes. But surely this event could not have found its way into the Plymouth morning papers.
Yes, sir. I had a telegram.
Might I ask from whom? You are very inquisitive, Mr. Holmes. It is my business. It was from Mr. Roundhay, the vicar.
Thank you.
And now perhaps you would not mind telling me if your suspicions point in any particular direction.
No, I can hardly answer that.
I may say that I have not cleared my mind entirely on the subject of this case, but I have every hope of reaching some conclusion. It would be premature to say more.
Then I have wasted my time and need not prolong my visit. Good day, gentlemen.
What? Oh, my word. Hey, what are you doing?
A simple question deserves an equally simple answer, my dear Watson. I'm putting on my Inverness, my dear stalker. Having permitted Dr. Leon Sterndale a few minutes' start, I propose to follow in his footsteps. I should immerse myself in a good book if I were you. I doubt whether you will see me again before morning.
Really, Holmes, you look exhausted. It's too bad, you know.
Is there a telegram for me, Watson?
Yes, came last night.
Thank you. The Plymouth Hotel. I learned the name of it from the vicar, and I wired to make certain that Dr. Sterndale's account was true.
Was it?
It appears that he did indeed spend last night there, and that he has actually allowed some of his baggage to go on to Africa. What do you make of that, Watson?
Well, that's a pretty deep interest in his business to go to all this trouble.
A deep interest?
Yes.
There is a thread here which we have not yet grasped. It might lead us through the tangle.
I'm glad you think so. Who on earth is that at this time of the morning? Oh, morning, Vicar. Come in.
Thank you. Mr. Holmes. Mr. Holmes, we are devil ridden. My poor Paddish is devil ridden. Satan himself is loose in it. We are given over into his hands.
My dear Vicar, calm yourself.
No, I tell you, sir.
Nothing of the sort, sir. Now, pray tell me what has happened.
Mr. Mortimer Tregennis.
Yes?
Mr. Tregennis died during the night with exactly the same symptoms as the rest of his family.
Mr. Roundhead, have you your dog cart outside?
Yes.
Can you fit us both into it?
Yes, I can.
And then, Watson, we will postpone our breakfast. Mr. Roundhead, we have entirely at your disposal, but hurry before things get disarranged.
Well, those poor hands, this man died of fright. Terror. See the contortion of the man?
Quite dreadful, Watson. Oh, dear me. How incredibly stuffy it is in here.
Yes, I remarked on that myself earlier, Mr. Holmes. My servant drew my attention to that lamp smoking on the center table. But I did not permit her to put it out so that you could see everything precisely as it had been.
An admirable precaution, Vicar. And then let us examine the lamp first and enable it to be extinguished. Oh, my word, such smoke. Watson. Hmm? Can you see a measure of any sort, Henry?
Measure? Hmm. There's a ruler over there.
Ah, that will be splendid, then. Perhaps you would be good enough to take the dimensions of the lamp, though.
Yes,
of course. While I get my lens onto this top shield over the chimney. Ah, as I thought. Now, I'll just scrape a sample of this ash from under the shield. And place it in this envelope. So.
You've got the measurements, huh?
Capital. So much for the lamp. Mr. Roundhead, if the police should desire information, I shall be happy to see any of them at the cottage. And now, Watson, I think perhaps we shall be better employed elsewhere.
So much for the constabulary's opinion of your services, Holmes. 2 days now, not a word out of them.
The time has not been wasted, at any rate. I have enjoyed my meditative rambles. And our experiments with this duplicate of the late Mortimer Tregennis's lamp have proved instructive.
I can't think what you hope to prove by all that. Timing the period it takes the oil to burn away, that sort of thing.
Well, you will remember that there is a single common point of resemblance in the varying reports which have reached us. And this concerns the atmosphere of the room in each case. In each case, there is evidence of a poisonous atmosphere. Now, we will suppose, then, that something was burned, causing strange toxic effects. With this train of reasoning in my head, I naturally looked about in Mortimer Tregennis's room to find some remains of this substance. Now, the obvious place to look was the talc shield or smoke guard of the lamp. And there, sure enough, I perceived a number of flaky ashes, and round the edges, a fringe of brownish powder, which was not yet consumed. And now, Watson, we will light our own lamp. We will, however, take the precaution of opening our window to avoid the premature decease of two deserving members of society.
Look, and I really think...
If we ever, like a sensible man, you determined to have nothing to do with the experiment...
I was really going to remind you of your state of health, Holmes.
Then you'll see it out.
Well, of course I will.
Ah. I thought I knew my Watson. Now, if you will seat yourself in the armchair near that open window. Good. And I will sit opposite you.
so that we may be the same distance away from the poison and face to face. Each is now in a position to watch the other and to bring the experiment to an end, should the symptoms seem alarming. Is that all clear?
Perfectly.
Well then, I take our powder, or what remains of it, and I lay it above the lamp. So, I light the lamp. Now, Watson, we will await developments.
They were not long in coming. I had hardly settled in my chair before I was conscious of a thick, musky odor, subtle and nauseous. A freezing horror took possession of me. I felt my hair was rising, that my eyes were protruding, that my mouth was open, that my tongue like leather. I tried to scream and was vaguely aware of some hoarse croak, which was my own voice, but distant and detached from myself. At the same moment, in some effort of escape, I broke through that cloud of despair and had a glimpse of Holmes' face. White, rigid and drawn in horror. The very look which I had seen upon the features of the dead. It was that vision which gave me an instant of sanity and strength. I dashed from my chair, threw my arms around Holmes, and together we lurched through the door and threw ourselves down upon the grass.
On my word, Watson. I owe you both my thanks and an apology. Yeah. But for your help, I might never have got from that room. But it was an unjustifiable experiment. Even for oneself. And doubly so for Fred. I'm really very sorry.
Moses, it's my great joy and privilege to help you, Holmes.
Luckily, I took the precaution of charging the lamp with only the smallest possible amount of oil. It will soon burn itself out. In the meantime, we must remain here in the fresh air and be thankful for it. I take it you have no longer a shadow of doubt as to how these tragedies were produced.
None whatever.
But the cause remains as obscure as before. Now let us sit down in the arbor here and discuss it together.
Yes, good idea.
I think we must admit that all the evidence points to this man, Mortimer Tregennis, having been a criminal in the first tragedy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, after all, if he did not throw this substance into the fire at the moment of his leaving the room, who did so? Had anyone else come in, the family would certainly have risen from the table.
Yes.
But no one did, Watson. If you recollect, the chairs were not pushed back. Besides, in peaceful Cornwall, visitors do not arrive after 10 o'clock at night.
Well, that's all very well, Holmes, but what about Tregennis' own death? Are you suggesting it was suicide?
Well, on the face of it, it's not an impossible supposition.
No.
The man who had the guilt upon his soul of having brought such a fate upon his family might well be driven by remorse to inflict it upon himself. There are, however, some cogent reasons against it.
What are they?
There is one man in England who can answer that. And I have made arrangements by which we shall hear the facts this afternoon from his own lips. He is a little before his time.
Dr. Sterndale.
Perhaps you would kindly step this way, Dr. Sterndale.
You sent for me, Mr. Holmes. I had your note about an hour ago, and I have come, though I really don't know why I should obey your summons.
Well, perhaps we can clear the point up before we separate. Meanwhile, I am much obliged to you for your courtesy and acquiescence.
Take a seat, Dr. Stone. I am at a loss to know, sir, what you can have to speak about which affects me. The killing of Mortimer Tregennis. Mr. Holmes, I have lived so long among savages and beyond the law that I have got into the way of being a law to myself. You would do well not to forget it. I have no desire to do you an injury.
Nor have I any desire to do you an injury, Dr. Stonedale. And surely the clearest proof of that is that knowing what I know, I have sent for you, and not for the police.
What do you mean? If this is bluff on your part, you have chosen the wrong man for your experiment. Now let us have no more beating about the bush. What do you mean?
I will tell you. And the reason I'll tell you is that I hope frankness may beget frankness. Now what my next step may be will depend entirely on the nature of your own defense.
My defense?
Yes, sir.
My defense against what? Against the charge of killing Mortimer Tregennis. Mr. Holmes, do all your successes depend on this prodigious power of bluff?
The bluff is on your side, Dr. Leon Strandale, not upon mine.
And proof. I will tell you some of the facts upon which my conclusions are based. Of your return from Plymouth, allowing much of your property to go on to Africa, I will say nothing. Save that it first informed me that you were one of the factors which had to be taken into account in reconstructing the drama.
I came back because I
have heard your reasons and regard them as unconvincing and inadequate. You will pass that. Now, you came down here to ask me whom I suspected. I refused to answer you. You then went to the vicarage, waited outside it for some time, and finally returned to your cottage.
How do you know that?
I followed you.
I saw no one.
That is what you may expect to see when I follow you. You spent a restless night at your cottage, and you formed certain plans, which in the early morning you proceeded to put into action. Leaving your door just before daybreak, you filled your pocket with some reddish gravel that was lying heaped beside your gate. You then walked swiftly for the mile to the vicarage. And you were wearing, I may remark, the same pair of ribbed tennis shoes which are upon your feet at the present moment. At the vicarage, you passed through the orchard and the side hedge, coming out under the window of the lodger Tregennis. It was now daylight, but the household was not yet stirring. You drew some of the gravel from your pocket and you threw it up at the window above you.
I believe you're the devil himself.
You took two or three handfuls before the lodger came to the window. And you beckoned him to come down. He dressed hurriedly and descended to his sitting room. You entered by the window. There was an interview, a short one, during which you walked up and down the room. You then came out and closed the window. Standing on the lawn outside, smoking a cigar and watching what occurred. Finally, after the death of Tregennis, you withdrew as you had come. Now, Dr. Strandale, how do you justify such conduct? And what were the motives for your actions?
Mr. Holmes, will you look upon this photograph?
Brenda Tregennis?
Yes, Brenda Tregennis. For years, I have loved her. For years, she has loved me.
I see.
I could not marry her. I have a wife in America. She deserted me years ago.
Proceed.
The vicar knew he was in our confidence. That was why he telegraphed to be on my return. Look at this package. Read the label.
Radix pedis diaboli. Devil's foot root.
I understand you're a doctor. Have you heard of it?
Never. What is it?
The root is shaped like a foot, half human, half goat-like. Hence the fanciful name given by a botanical missionary. It is used as an ordeal poison by the medicine men in certain districts of West Africa. You see, just reddish-brown powder, like snuff. One day, only a couple of weeks ago, I showed Mortimer Tregennis some of my African curiosities. I told him of the strange properties of this powder. Well, remember how he plied me with questions about it. And I realized since how, when my back was turned, he must have abstracted some of the powder. But I thought of none of this until the vicar's telegram reached me at Plymouth.
When Mortimer Tregennis thought you would be safely away at sea.
Yes, exactly. As soon as I heard the details, I felt assured that my poison had been used. I came round to see you on the chance that some other explanation had suggested itself to you. But there could be none. I was convinced that Mortimer Tregennis had used the devil's foot powder on his family with the idea that he would become sole guardian of their property. In doing so, he killed Brenda, the one being whom I have ever loved or who's ever loved me. I asked myself, should I appeal to the law? But how could I hope to make a jury of countrymen believe so fantastic a story? So I determined that the fate which he had given to others should be shared by himself. Now I have told you all, the rest you know.
We had better hear what happened between you and him at his lodging.
Simply that I told him I had come both as judge and as executioner. I lit the lamp, put the powder above it, and threatened to come back into the room and shoot him if he should try to get out. The wretch was paralyzed with fright at the sight of my revolver. He died in 5 minutes. Perhaps if you loved a woman, Mr. Holmes, you would have done as much yourself.
any rate, you can do what you like with me. Even when I'm living, you can fear death less than I do. What were your plans?
I'd intended to bury myself away in Central Africa. My work there is only half finished.
Then go and do the other half. I at least am not prepared to prevent you.
Mr. Holmes,
go, man, go. Good day. Thank you.
Some fumes which are not poisonous would be a welcome change, Watson.
Yes.
Unfortunately, my pipe was in my pocket when we dashed out.
What an incredible business, Holmes.
I have never loved, Watson. But if I did, and if the woman I loved met such an end, I might act even as our lawless lion hunter has done. Who knows? But I think you must agree this is not a case in which we are called upon to interfere. You would not denounce the man.
Certainly not, Holmes. Certainly not.
Sherlock Holmes and the Case of the Devil's Foot by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, adapted by Michael Hadwick. Roy Brinson played the part of Dr. Watson. Roland Hunter was Mr. Roundhay. Robert Clothier, Sherlock Holmes. Sam Payne, Mortimer Tregennis, Barbara Tremaine, Mrs. Porter, and David Hughes, Leon Sterndale. Technical operation was by Ian Stephen, with sound effects by Ted Levesque. The play was produced in Vancouver by the CBC and directed by Gerald Newman. This is Ray Nichols speaking. Thank you.